We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for the next fiscal year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2009. Simply go to the sponsors page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. Thanks for your support.
I think that I believe that a marriage should be between a man and a woman. No offense to anybody out there.
It's the same answer that the President of the United States gave.
I believe that marriage is the union between a man and a woman.
I think that it should be between a man and a woman. Thank you.
It's the same answer that many people gave.
I am not somebody who promotes same-sex marriage.
She gave an honorable answer. She gave an answer from her heart. And I think for that, she has to be commended.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love Issues, etc.
Well, this is a very special Friday here on Issues, etc. Special for a number of reasons. We'll get into some of those reasons a little bit later in the program. But it's a typical Friday here at LPR. Some listener email, blog of the week, if I can remember which one I picked. And Issues, etc. soundbite of the week. That's where we play four soundbites from this week's audio. We ask you to vote for the soundbite of the week. You do so, and that's coming up in a half hour. Just give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or you can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. That's the first hour of the program on this Friday, the 15th of May. The second hour we're devoting entirely to Handel's Messiah. Dr. Joseph Hurl is going to be joining us, Associate Professor of Music at Concordia University in Nebraska. We're going to walk through some of the high points of Handel's Messiah and explore its message and its theology in the second hour of Issues, etc. Again, our number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talkback@issuesetc.org. Now, just before we came on the air, some very special guests arrived at LPR Studios from Warren, Michigan. Jennifer Belaska and her husband and daughter. Now, Jennifer might be known to some of our listeners by name, but probably better known because she is the dear sweet person who, after we were canceled in March of 2008, on her own recognizance, started a petition online that eventually got, 7,600 plus signatures. And if you listen during the breaks every day, we're thanking those people one by one. We're actually getting pretty near the end of the list. Jennifer came down from Warren, Michigan to visit with us and to see some other people here in the area, along with her husband, Jason, and her little girl, who is absolutely adorable, Natalie. Jennifer Belaska, Jason, and Natalie are welcome to be with us. They're watching the show here from out there where the sorry people sit. I'm the king and the rest of them are the sorry people. That's what we say at our house. Our daughter is the queen and we are the sorry people. But it's listener email to begin with. Oh, by the way, we also have another great announcement to make on this Friday. We heard from the president of Lutheran Public Radio a couple days ago that Issues Etc. now has an official Circle R registered trademark on the name. Lutheran Public Radio now has the Circle R registered trademark on the Issues Etc. name. That took about a year or more to do. We're very thankful for that. It's listener email to begin. Where do we go first, Jeff?
Well, first, again, thanks, Harry Madsen, the president of Lutheran Public Radio, for all the hard work he did to get us that trademark. Let's go to Michael in Billings, Montana. He said, I couldn't help but entreat you out of genuine Christian concern to forgo your attacks on the gospel as recorded by Van Halen during the Sammy Hagar era. This is how we began listener email last week, and here we are yet again. Unfortunately, it has become fashionable in our post-hair metal era to continually attack the merits of Van Halen under the direction of Sammy Hagar. These David Lee Roth pietists are in error. I encourage them all to please recognize their sins of pride and a false sense of superiority over other Van Halen fans. The merits of Hagar can be seen in such recordings as 5150, 01812, and selected recordings from for unlawful carnal knowledge. These albums and verses prove that Van Hagar was truly as good as early Van Halen. Admittedly, the group did fall into apostasy, as witnessed by their later works, namely the album Balance and that whole Gary Cherone debacle. However, we as Christians should not discard Van Hagar's meritorious work simply because of their later transgressions. I entreat all Diamond Dave fans to please rejoin their brethren and to not lord their narrow selection of the Van Halen canon over other fans who can recognize the merits of Van Halen under either band leader.
All right, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this because, first of all, at LPR, I don't think that Jennifer Belasquez is old enough to remember Van Halen, but at LPR, those of us who are old enough to remember and have enjoyed Van Halen, the so-called David Lee Roth or Diamond Dave pietists outnumber those who are Sammy Hagar fans. But let's just make it one of these homo legumina anti legumina things. You know, in the canon of Scripture, there are the books upon which everyone uniformly agreed, the homo legumina, and then there were the books where there wasn't complete consensus, and those were called the anti legumina. And we can deal with that. We'll just put Sammy Hagar and his days. We're not going to say anything about Cherone. I listened to a little bit of it earlier this afternoon. I found it completely unpalatable. And so we're just going to put Sammy Hagar in the anti-legumina category and let him remain in the canon, but there will still be some doubts as to whether or not he belongs. That's the best I'm going to be able to do.
By the way, I just went back and asked Jen if she ever heard of Van Halen. She says, I love Sammy Hagar.
All right, so it's a tie. Unless we want to get Jason, I mean, Natalie's not going to be able to say much, but unless we want Jason's opinion on Van Halen.
You know, I think we should ask is Ree, the board operator at our sister station, KNGN in McCook, Nebraska. Ree, give us a call, 877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE. What do you think, Ree?
Ree does not strike me. I mean, I've only talked with her one time, but she does not strike me as someone who has any affinity for Van Halen at all.
Oh. Au contraire. Give us a call, Ree. We're waiting to hear from you.
What's next?
David Lee Roth, Sammy Hagar. Well, the most emailed this week, the topic, Christianity and torture. I guess no surprise there. Let's begin with Frank in Las Vegas, Nevada. It seems to me that in order to love your neighbor, under certain circumstances, enhanced interrogation techniques are warranted. In order to save others, dunking a person's head in water would be okay under certain circumstances. Torture is when you permanently maim another person, like cutting off a hand or a finger. As in the Islamic tradition, you murder another by decapitating a person. Dunking a head in water is not torture since it does not permanently maim or harm an individual. It is very unpleasant, but does not physically maim the person being interrogated. This is Frank in Las Vegas. Thanks for the email, Frank.
Well, first of all, Frank, I'm going to disagree with your definition of torture. I don't think it has to do permanent damage to be classified as torture. I mean, there are all kinds of acts you can carry out on someone that you could say doesn't do permanent damage that I think would still qualify in practice as torture. What I really want to take issue with all due respect, Frank, I know you're a longtime listener. What I really want to take issue with is that it's somehow made okay to do something like waterboarding. Let's just say that waterboarding, if it is torture, and I'll say it is torture for the sake of argument, is wrong. Even when you do it, it's wrong. Even when you have to do it, it's wrong. It's never made okay by extenuating circumstances. That's what, and I said this before when we were talking about Christians and torture, that is what is called situational ethics, or more popularly, utilitarianism. It is simply saying the circumstances or the ends justify the means, and Christians cannot take this view morally. It is a recipe for moral chaos. So what does a Christian do? The Christian says there are certain things that are intrinsically evil, but at times may be necessary. Because they're necessary doesn't mean – now, the necessary in a human sense. Because they're necessary does not mean they're right. Just because something is necessary to do doesn't make it right. It's still intrinsically evil. This is the only tenable moral position that a Christian can consistently take on any moral issue, much less torture. Because the minute you say that the circumstances could make something that would be wrong in one instance right in another instance, you make yourself the arbiter of what is right and wrong rather than God's holy law.
The Luther's explanation of the fifth commandment should not hurt or harm his neighbor in his body, right?
Right. And it doesn't say permanently maim him. It doesn't say do permanent damage. It says do not hurt or harm him in his body. And that means that – now, someone would say – we had an email from someone that, was too lengthy to read on the air. Someone did say, well, are you saying that if you had a terrorist mastermind in your custody and you were an agent of the government and he wasn't giving you the answers and there were people that were about to die at a plot that he had hatched, that you would just sit there and turn the other cheek? The answer is absolutely not. I would torture him. But I wouldn't say it's right. I would say it's necessary. I would do what I had to do within what other limits I was given by my superiors to get the information, hopefully get it successfully. But I wouldn't turn around and say what I did was right. I'd say what I did was wrong but necessary.
Lesser of two evils.
Lesser of two evils.
All right. Another email on torture. Eric in Pennsylvania. I believe that torture is never justified and is inherently evil. I am very disappointed that both the Republican and Democratic parties have come to the defense of those who allowed people to be tortured and defended the policy. Those who decide to remain in these political parties should be ashamed of themselves. Furthermore, while torture works in the movies, in real life it is a highly unreliable method of extracting accurate information. It is well known that the goal of those who are being tortured is to act as quickly as possible to figure out what those who are inflicting the pain want to hear so the pain will end. The accuracy of the information is irrelevant. While torture may satisfy some perverse and satanic need for revenge, it should never be employed or tolerated by anyone, especially Christians. There are far better and more reliable methods, writes Eric in Pennsylvania.
And there are ways of getting information without inflicting a torturous means. I mean, there are. They may not work. You know, I remember when John McCain was running for president, he said, talking about his time being tortured as a prisoner of war in Vietnam, and talking about the shame when he finally broke and said things under torture that he knew he had sworn never to say. And he was told by others after the fact, everybody breaks. Everybody talks sooner or later. You can get people to talk. Just remember, when it's wrong, even if it's necessary. When we come back, more listener email, and then Issues Etc. blog of the week. And soundbite of the week, I'm Todd Wilkin.
Oh, yes, I deliver the letter. The sooner the better. You gotta wait a minute, wait a minute. Oh, yeah. Wait a minute, wait a minute. Oh, yeah. You gotta wait a minute, wait a minute.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring Issues Etc. back. Joan Sieving, Matthew Paul, Catherine and Ronald Saar, Jason Krieger, Nellie Bitzer, Jack Forsberg, Paula Zarnetsky, Donna Glaub, Douglas Poss, and Ethan Wyant. Thanks for your support.
We at NewReformationPress.com are committed to providing a hand-picked selection of books and teaching materials that educate, inform, and entertain while relentlessly focusing on the gospel. Discover our growing library of resources by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn radio program, including his powerful address, The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church, or Bible in an Hour by Pastor Wade Butler. And be sure not to miss our selection of t-shirts, gifts, and artwork. NewReformationPress.com. Finally, Reformation theology made accessible.
No infomercials for LCMS, Inc. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Stephen Parks on why your congregation should join the Issues Etc. 300.
If I could, I'd just like to challenge any Lutheran pastors that are listening to consider becoming one of the congregations that supports Issues Etc. My own congregation is a very small church, and I know it can be difficult to try and budget $1,000 a year to become one of the Issues Etc. 300. But if you're being blessed by this, as I know you are, and if your congregation is being blessed by this, as I know that it is, I submit to bring it to the congregation to prayerfully consider supporting the outreach of Issues Etc., not only here in the United States, but also around the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. Simply go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc., the Issues Etc. 300.
So one of the things that Ehrman says is if you have any variations whatsoever in your text, it can't be the Word of God. And that's pretty much what the King James Onlyist is saying.
We pastors, we're just replaceable parts. He in himself is not the thing that's keeping the whole church together. It's Christ
We are not indispensable.
He saw Jesus pray, knowing Jesus was innocent, and that thief realized Jesus is free in a way I've never been before.
He confesses that what we're doing is more important than what God wants to give, that we're the real show.
Well, can't we have the best of both worlds? A prominent place for the praise band to set up and do their thing, along with this emphasis, Christ's sacrifice for us and how it is delivered to us in the Word and Sacrament.
No way.
Just a little taste of what lays ahead. Four Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Four soundbites. We want your votes on them in about 10 minutes here on Issues Etc. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Remember, when you vote, the best vote every Friday, it's the LPR bundle package. It's an I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues Etc. travel mug, and an Issues Etc. pen and bumper sticker. That's coming up here in about 10 minutes. Soundbite of the Week. Oh, you know what else is coming up? June the 1st, we're going to relaunch the Issues Etc. journal. Now, it's going to be via email. That's how we're going to deliver it, via email. And if you want the Issues Etc. journal, all you need to do is email us first at journal@issuesetc.org. The address, journal@issuesetc.org. I have an article in there called Sheep Don't Keep Track. It's about your good works and whether or not they really matter to you. And then George Borghardt tells his story of going from Rome to the Reformation. It's in the New Issues Etc. journal, debuting on the 1st of June. If you want it, journal@issuesetc.org.
All right, one more email on torture. Jeff in Columbia, Maryland. I was listening to the audio open line segment on Christianity and torture last night and was surprised at something that never entered the conversation, at least not that I heard. It seemed that everyone was approaching the issue as though it was a question of whether Christians as Christians could in good conscience participate in torture. But shouldn't we be looking at it in terms of whether or not God's representatives in government are permitted to engage in torture? When Paul reminds us that the government has the power of the sword, a weapon that inflicts pain, injury, and even death, and is charged by God with using that power for the good of its people, is he talking about just about police power and capital punishment? If an agent of a government engages in some form of torture in the course of protecting the nation from harm, is this not another use of the power of the sword? Now, the matters of how far is too far and what is compatible with American values in our system of government are different questions. But it seems to me that Christians who understand the power and authority God has given his representatives and the purposes for which he gave them are less likely to have the fundamental problem with torture that Leonard Pitts and many others think we should have. This writes Jeff from Columbia, Maryland.
Okay, I think, first of all, the question that we were asking during that open lines was not whether or not Christians could participate in torture, but whether or not Christians tolerate torture. Leonard Pitts raised the question of whether or not Christians disproportionately with the rest of the population approve of torture as a means of waging war, getting information. All right, so Christians certainly can participate in an action like that under the agency of the God-ordained government, because the sword that the government does bear includes things that would fall into the category of torture. If a police officer can whap you on the head with a billy club to subdue you, or put you in a headlock to bring you under control or render you temporarily unconscious, as a means of self-protection and also protecting the society and bringing you into custody, all of those things inflict harm. All of those things are harming our neighbor, but they're necessary in those instances, and the government is authorized by God to do these things. Now you say, does God authorize sin? This is a messy world. A lot of things that God authorizes us to do cannot be done by us without sin. I want you to think about this for a moment. There's another place of torment and torture that is carried out by agents of God. It's called hell. Read in the book of Revelation how the unrighteous who eventually end up in hell are tormented day and night before the Lamb by the angels of God. It's a torture chamber. That's what hell is. Now you say, are the angels carrying out sin? No, they're not. When the angels do it, they do it without sin. But we're not angels, and we can't do it without sin. I hope that didn't confuse it even more. Go ahead.
A quick email from Michael in Lovelock, Nevada. He says, I'm a big Van Halen fan, and I would say that I love the David Lee Roth era over Sammy Hagar, He says it's not OU812, but OU812. Do you get it? Have a good day.
Yeah, it shows how, you know, Jeff is operating here with, he has no basis for his Sammy Hagar thing. I mean, this is, he, you know.
Believe me, I'm no music aficionado. I'm guilty of that.
For that, we go to Craig. Craig is the man who knows all, sees all, listens to all when it comes to music.
Big Kiss fan.
He is, actually. And, that's where Craig and I part company. As far as I'm concerned, Kiss was a clown act, not a rock and roll band. And I'm sorry. And he's given me a dirty look, but there's division. There's division cutting all through. And rock and roll causes division between me and Jeff and Craig, and between Craig and me. And we're just never going to be able to agree on all these things.
Amy in Minnesota, in relation to swine flu and the common cup, a friend...
Clown act. I said clown act. That's right. He can't get over it. Go ahead.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Amy in Minnesota, in relation to swine flu and the common cup, a friend and coworker of mine is Roman Catholic. She came into work pretty mad on Monday. She said that her church in Iowa announced before Mass on Sunday that they would not be serving the blood in light of the swine flu outbreak. She thought it was ridiculous. I was surprised, to say the least, and realized at that point that I hadn't even thought about the flu when I took the common cup on Sunday at my Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation. The one practice I have fallen into is to refrain from taking the common cup when I myself am sick. Is this wrong for me to do? I guess if we didn't also have individual cups, I wouldn't have that option. My reasoning is that the common cup was just reinstituted a couple of years ago, and I don't want the people who are already paranoid to have one more excuse not to take the common cup. I attend a small church. Just wondering what the opinion is on this. Thanks for the email, Amy in Minnesota.
No, it isn't wrong. You have to. Each person has to follow their own conscience here. And what you're attempting to do is, it may be unwarranted, but you're attempting to remove any obstacle or stumbling block from your neighbor when it comes to the reception of the Lord's Supper. And this is, we ought to do this. Of course, this is a weaker brother scenario. And St. Paul doesn't say, well, accommodate the weaker brother forever. He says, accommodate the weaker brother. And when the weaker brother ceases to be a weaker brother, then the accommodation is no longer necessary. I will say again what I said before when we were talking about this. When it comes to those who say, well, it's Christ's blood in the cup, therefore it cannot communicate anything to me but what is beneficial to me, physically, spiritually. Well, I don't think Scripture allows us to say that. But I think Christians can, in good conscience, receive the body and blood of Christ in a common cup. And if you get sick, you get sick. There are a lot of worse things that could happen to you. I mean, sooner or later, Christians are going to have to answer with their very lives for that blood. So if you get sick, if you don't fear death as a Christian, you don't fear death at least as the man of faith fears death, then getting sick from taking the Lord's Supper is pretty much the least of your worries. But if you are guarding the consciences and practices of your neighbors there at the communion rail, I think you're doing the right thing.
I can't think of a better way to leave this veil of tears, can you?
It'd be a great way. I mean, there are a lot of lesser things you could give your life for.
Steve in Bronzeville, Texas. What a stunningly concise and moving presentation on these gospel gifts, the sacraments, your interview with Pastor Daniel Preuss. May the Preuss boys serve long and this well always. Sola Deo Gloria. And if I can only read, this segment would be a lot better. Please pray that I may convince my congregation of the need to use regularly your resources for Christian education and catechesis in our programs. May your many gifts continue to flourish and unfold for the people of God, our good and his glory, writes Steve in Brownsville, Texas.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thanks for listening in Texas. And yes, the Daniel Preuss has been doing us a great service in this three-part series we're doing together on Christ-centered theology. In fact, we got another episode coming up Wednesday next week. Is that correct? Daniel Preuss will be here in studio to conclude that three-part series on Christ-centered theology.
Conversion? Is that what we're talking about?
Conversion and...
You don't like that word, so what is the other word we put?
I'm warming up to it. Conversion and regeneration, yeah. I think, is what we said.
Okay.
So that's
Do we believe in that? Do we believe in baptismal regeneration?
We absolutely do.
Oh, I thought we changed our viewpoint on that.
No, we've never changed on that. Baptismal regeneration is still going strong.
Was that passing? Are you sure? I thought there was a Synod resolution that said we no longer believe in.
You know, even if there was, we're not company men. They can resolve whatever they want.
I forget. I just
churchmen, not company men. Is that one of our tags?
Church, no, that's a good. That's
didn't
a good one,
I suggest
though.
That one? Churchman, yes. Not
no,
company.
But you
man.
Did now, so I'll type it in
there
quickly. Pastor Messer in Alma, Michigan. I've been listening to Issues, etc. for many years now, and I have to say that the show has never been better. Kudos not only on picking up where you left off, but on actually producing a better show than ever. He said, accompanying his letters, our congregation's $1,000 donation to join the Issues, etc. 300. Lastly, I just want to say that I love that you love your on-demand listeners. I listen live as often as I can, but the majority of my listening is done later. In fact, I'm writing this letter from a hotel room in Greenfield, Indiana, on my way home from the Association of Confessional Lutherans Conference in Bloomington, Minnesota, to attend the funeral of my uncle in Danville, West Virginia. I have spent over 20 hours driving already with several more hours ahead of me before I finally return home in a few days. What a blessing it has been to have the last few weeks of Issues, etc. broadcasts to listen to as I travel. It has definitely made my travels not only tolerable, but enjoyable, writes Pastor Messer in Alma, Michigan.
Thank you very much, Pastor Messer. This is exactly what we mean when we say we love our on-demand listeners. Not only do I believe that it is the future of this kind of enterprise, but I believe that it is the way that people are going to be getting a message like Issues, etc. for a long time to come. You guys are the backbone of our listenership. We love all our listeners, especially our on-demand listeners. When we come back, blog of the week.
And make believe it came from you.
Faithful confession trumps company loyalty. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
We're going to launch an online version of the Issues, Etc. journal on June the 1st, and you can subscribe by sending your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org. Do Christians make progress in their good works? I've written an article for the new online journal titled Sheep Don't Keep Track. You'll also find an article detailing Pastor George Borghardt's journey from Catholicism to Lutheranism. Get your copy of the Issues, Etc. journal by sending your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Regardless of your political leanings, you'll probably agree with me, Sarah Palin is a strong advocate for America's unborn babies. Throughout the presidential campaign, she didn't hesitate when asked about her opposition to abortion. Well, she's at it again. Governor Palin signed a bill allowing the state to give birth certificates for stillborn babies. This means grieving parents don't have to fight a government bureaucracy to have the existence of their dearly loved baby acknowledged. And it's a step, albeit a small one, in the right direction of recognizing human life in the womb. These are the kinds of bills pro-abortion activists secretly hate but dare not oppose in public. And the governor's action is yet another reason why I'm such a big fan of Sarah Palin.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
On behalf of the staff of Issues, Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues, Etc. J.G. Bischoff, Luke Berenger, Andrew Nehring, Christine Kaseman, Carl Fuchs, Suzanne Eubanks, Linda Newman, Wanda Glitz, and Deborah Jaderich. Thanks for your support.